Good morning, everybody, and welcome to The Times of Your Life on WGTN Jamestown. I'm Andrew Hill.
I'm Russ Dietrich.
Russ, Happy New Year.
And to you, too, and everybody. Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
We made it through 2021 unscathed,
yes.
And you know what that means? It's 2022. So
well, that's what follows, right?
That's the way it is.
Good.
I remember when I was a kid, you know, it was the big joke when you're in middle school and, you know, your teacher and your students at the end of the year before you take the Christmas break, you go, see you next year, see you next year.
Yes.
And you laugh. And I did that to my wife the other day and she goes, don't do that. She goes, I work with kids all day.
How long does it take you to catch up now if you're writing a check or you're writing something? Not to write 2021.
It probably takes me a good 2 months, at least.
Yeah.
It really does. We'll have to ask that question to our guest here on The Times of Your Life this morning. Our first guest of the new year is the one and only, one of the finest football coaches, not only in Chautauqua County, but New York, and definitely Falconer. It is Coach Bill Race. Bill, welcome to The Times of Your Life.
Thank you. I'm kind of used to being here, but sometimes I miss it, and sometimes I don't, you know?
Well, we're going to have a lot of fun, and our goal here on the show is that you forget the microphones or even in the room. We're
okay.
Just having a friendly conversation. Sometimes
we are?
Yeah, well, and sometimes,
I gotta watch myself then.
Sometimes with you, that's why I'll have the delay button here and the sensor button. No. But
okay.
Don't get carried away now.
That's right. In all seriousness, Coach, Happy New Year to you. And there's so many directions we can go with you, and it all comes back to the world of sports. But we're going to try to break away from that a little bit during the show, too. So maybe we come up with some ideas or background information on you that people aren't even aware of. Example, are you a singer? Did you ever sing, Coach?
Yes, I did.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
What was your favorite song?
Believe it or not, it was Angry.
Angry?
Yeah.
How does that go? Can you hum it?
Angry. You have to be angry.
I can see why you became a football coach.
Yeah.
I can see why you said he used to
right.
be a singer.
Yeah. Right. Did you sing in school?
No, it was a play that the town put on, and at that point it was Black Faces, and and they were what they call in men, in people.
Yeah.
And I was one of those, and I was a senior in high school.
Oh, wow.
And it was made with all high school kids. And we put this play on, and I had a lot of fun. That's my song I played. And
were you playing sports at that point, too?
Yeah.
So was it uncharacteristic back then? Was it a stereotype that the jocks didn't do any of that artsy stuff?
No.
Or not in Scranton, not where you're from?
Yeah, well, Scranton is an area. It's coal, miners, and football in Scranton was... That next to God, that's what everyone played.
Really?
I played, actually, they were illegal because I was in eighth grade in a Catholic school. The high school was across the street. So they saw me playing touch football. And they asked me if I wanted to play JV football. So they brought me over as an eighth grader. So I played JV football with the team, I wasn't supposed to. So when I went to the school when I was in ninth grade, I started from ninth grade until my graduation, but I played eighth grade, which I wasn't supposed to be. It kind of squeezed me in there a little bit.
Yeah.
Coach, going back to the music, was there music in your family? Is that how you got started with it? Or where did music come into your life?
My family on both sides did nothing but... work on coal. It was only out of, 16 kids. There were only two kids that went to college, and only one graduated. None of them ever went by eighth grade. They were taken out of school, and they worked what they call it in a they separate coal from rock. And my mother and them all went to the...
And they put the other stuff in the bony pile.
Exactly.
My father was a coal miner. He went to coal mines when he was 13 years old. I think he went to third grade, and he could get into coal mines at 13, but you had to have another miner with you. And his father was a part-time miner, so he went into coal mines that way and worked 28 years in the coal mines before he came to Jamestown.
My dad was in it 30-some years, and... when they came, they had everything collapsed down there because of hard coal, they dig, and then they use what they call a buffer and to hold the ground up. Well, this one company that came in found an area of coal, and they'll follow that vein until they run out. But doing so, the pillars that were there to support it, they stole.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
they weren't supposed to steal it, but they did, and they did under the cemetery.
Oh, jeez.
So I was sitting there one night, me and my mom and dad, and the first thing you see, we're looking at trees just disappear.
Oh.
Because half of the cemetery in Archibald, where I lived, it just destroyed everything. People sued the Hudson Coal Company, and they went out of business. But that's what you live with when you have underground mining.
Yeah.
My father used to tell me and show me a couple of different places. I was born in Patton, Pennsylvania, down in Cambria County. And we would go down there to visit the family. And he'd show me places where the coal mines that were vacated caught on fire. And they burned themselves out. And the places where the roads or fields caved right in, the smoke was coming out.
That fire that they had was in Dixon City. And the sulfur burning coming off the people, they finally had to try to put them out, and it took them, I think, 6 years to put the fires out.
Wow.
They poured sand and water in the mine, so they built up.
Did your father have a canary?
No, but you better have a canary.
That's right. They had to carry a canary in.
No, if there's gas in there, they'll spot. They get. Oh, did yours?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He
was part of it. And he lost his one little finger. He was one of the first ones with the Joy mining machine.
Mm-hmm.
And he was part of that, and he was working with that. And something caved in and hit his hand, and he's lost his little finger. And they tried to save it. And the doctor told him, you'll know if we're not successful saving it. And my dad said, what do you mean? He says, you'll begin to smell it. And Bertie did. He did smell it. And
my goodness.
And the finger was starting to rot. So when I was a kid, he was without his one finger.
Wow.
You know, a lot of people, you tell people that about canaries, and they don't believe you. Mm-hmm. But it's the truth.
Yeah.
And the other thing they were not allowed to do, they were not allowed to kill the rats in the mines.
The what?
The rats running in the mines.
Mm-hmm.
They would not kill
the rats.
Them.
Yeah.
Because many times that was a meal when there was a cave-in. So
the rats
those guys
run.
Were in there a long time.
Oh, my gosh.
And the rats were you know, kept them alive.
Yep.
And my dad also, they had a round dinner bucket, and on the bottom was water, and on the top was your sandwiches and stuff. And when they come out of the coal mines, there was a supervisor there that checked them. And there had to be some water in the water container, and there had to be at least a half a sandwich in the bucket. They could not eat all of their meal in there. That was it, just in case they had a cave-in and something like that would happen.
I didn't know that.
In the coal mines, as you talk, you know, and listen to the family, you remember that John L. Lewis became president of the coal mines. Our blessing many times at the table was not the Lord first in blessing. It was John L. Lewis and then the Lord, because it was part of the United Mine Workers.
Yeah, he
and
was.
President Roosevelt called him in when the war started, and because the miners were then negotiating, because things were bad and they were negotiating a contract. And the president told John L. Lewis, look, we need you coal miners. We need the coal. The coal is going to be an important part of our success in the war with all of the manufacturing, et cetera. He says, you guys cannot go out on strike. And he says, well, these things are bad there, too. We're trying to work something out. He says, listen, you cannot go out on strike. If you go out on strike, I guarantee you that all of the coal miners that are on strike will be in the front lines within 2 weeks.
Hmm.
And he says, in the military, in the front lines in 2 weeks in Europe? John Lewis said, yeah. Well, he said, man, what a good deal. He said, what do you mean a good deal? He said, well, there are front lines in Europe. He says, it's a heck of a lot safer than the coal mines in Pennsylvania.
That's for sure.
Seriously.
So that's all of this kind of. But let's get back to you. What school door did you walk in the first day of school ever?
Grade school? I went to a Catholic school, St. Thomas's.
Located?
Right in Archibald. It was a small town 10 miles south of Scranton.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for eight until eighth grade. There was we didn't have a kindergarten. It was for one through eight.
Well, Pennsylvania didn't have a kindergarten. Huh? There was no kindergarten in Pennsylvania.
Mm-mm.
It started at first grade.
I had the nudge.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
And I wanted to quit the choir when I was in eighth grade. And I remember, I forget the sister I had, but she said, well, you tell this, singing teacher that teaches the choir that you're quitting. And I said, okay. So when I came in, the boys were on one side, the girls was on the other, and I sat in the middle, and Sister Rosaline, her name was, she said, Mr. Race, why aren't you standing? I said, I quit. And she said, oh, you did? She said, so you don't want to sing anymore? I said, I can't sing anyway. So as I went by, the next thing I knew, I had my two ears being pulled, and she said, are you going to sit now, or are you going to get up and sing? And I said, well, leave my ears go before, so I have to get up and sing, but they wouldn't let you quit anything.
Well, by your voice, it sounded good. You didn't experience what I experienced in school. I think it was in about seventh grade. There was a music, you know, that was a class you took.
Mm-hmm.
And once a year, that group would get together for the school, and they would put on a program for the family, you know, the night in the auditorium. And Miss Miller was a teacher, and she says, now, I remember now, this coming days, it was going to be that night in school, and you guys get dressed with a sport coat and a tie, and he says, and then when our group is able to go up to be part of the program, there will be a set of bleachers on the stand and in the auditorium, and pointed me, and I think Elton Nelson, I almost think Russ Eklund, some of us, she told us now, when you get ready, you guys go up, and you go up on the top row, in the back row, standing up on the back row to stand up and sing. But when we start to sing, don't you guys say a word. Just make your mouth.
Hey, we have a lot in common,
which
I didn't realize before.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Not quitting, Coach. Is that something, I mean, that was instilled into you as a young man that, you know, carried over to your philosophy when it came to coaching?
Maybe it did. At least made me realize that life isn't easy, for one thing. Don't take things for granted. You know, my mom and dad used to say, you get nothing for nothing. Mm. And you work for it. So I worked in a little restaurant washing dishes and things. Mm-hmm. I started in eighth grade, and I finished my whole years in high school.
So you worked through high school?
Yeah. After football games, I would go to Durkin's, and I had to go in, wash the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me $12 a week, and my mother and them gave me two. They took the 10
right.
and gave me two. So
right.
it's just a matter of you know, doing what you have to do to, and then I guess you just realize, and I think, yeah, it did give me an idea when I was coaching, because if I saw talent,
mm-hmm.
and I felt that they weren't doing up with what I think I should, they should be doing,
mm-hmm.
I might have hollered at them a little bit, or maybe a little bit more. But I don't think I ever embarrassed anybody that they quit on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we always understood. I wasn't the best. I had people, fantastic coaches.
Mm.
And I had kids that, I God bless me, when I came up here, my feelings was I'm going to stay here 3 years, and then I'm going back to Scranton. Because when I stopped playing, I don't want to say the programs were different, but they were. When I left Scranton, you played football. Your businesses and everything were shut down. You went to the games. We played against 5,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was only freshman.
Mm-hmm.
Then I came up here, and then you have like a 1,500 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's... The 1,500 we had at Faulkner, I'll tell you, I wouldn't give up for 5,000 people.
Yeah,
you know, and the kids that we had, and
Coach, where did sports come to you? Was it, what, did you follow your father? Was there an older brother? Was there an uncle or an aunt or what?
Nope. Nobody out of the 16 people that in our family ever played anything. They all went to the mines.
Yeah.
But my dad, when I was in eighth grade, he took me on what they call a Loki, which is a small engine. And he gave me a hood if he got caught, he would have gotten fired. Mm. And it was a raincoat. And he took me through it, and he came out and he said, "That's the first time you ran, and that's going to be the last time you're in."
Wow.
So,
wow.
And then we just played football and sandlot most of the time. Mm-hmm. There's all basketball, both there, baseball. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I get up at 8 o'clock in the morning on a weekend to go down to the field to make sure I get there so they're going to play, because if you don't, you're going to sit around.
All right.
But there were no organized football mm-hmm. teams or baseball teams or anything like that. Not much anyway.
But when did you realize that it is a team affair?
I realized it the first time I started playing, and my mother and father came out and told me that I better watch myself, and you're not the only person out there, and if you're going to play sports that way, my mother told me you're not going to play because I won't let you. So I learned pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had Lyle Parkers tell me at one time. He says, you know, it's a team affair, and don't ever forget that, because I was left-handed and trying to pitch, and he was helping me a little bit. He says, and realize the minute you throw the ball, you pitch the ball, you're out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's got to catch it. Somebody's got to throw it.
Somebody's
got to throw it at the right base. And if they don't, he says, you just threw the ball, and you're done with that play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awesome. It's that same way in football and basketball and everything, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, well, I guess.
When the quarterback passes the ball to the other guy, the quarterback's done.
There's so many things, I think, behind football or baseball or basketball, more mental part of the game that I think today some people forget the mental part of a football. Some people forget that kids are kids. They're going to change. I couldn't coach today, I'll be truthful.
Yeah.
Mm. No, I could not coach today. Because I would probably be in jail.
Probably.
Yeah,
I mean, that's nothing against.
I'm not lying on it, because
it's just
the way
world.
I handled kids when I was coaching them, and of course there was Joe Sanfilippo and all those coaches that we coached against. We all were the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Wally Hucknall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about it a lot.
And yeah.
You have to change with the times if people are going to play. Played these sports. So.
Oh, well, what was a position you played the most of in football?
In high school, I was a halfback and a strong safety for 4 years in high school. Then I went to the Army, and I played in the Army. I was a halfback and a defensive end, and I started for 2 years with them. Then I came home. I worked in a defense plant for 2 years before I went to college. I went to East Stroudsburg, tried out for baseball and football. Then I knew I was going to play football. And after two games, they moved me up to varsity from my freshman year to my senior year. And I quit baseball because Gregory, who was the football coach, had an off-season workout, and he wanted me to be on that. And then after that, I just got into coaching, and I came up here, and I think it's been all my life.
Hmm. When did the T formation start?
The T formation and the wing T came up with Oklahoma. Was the, I forget the coach's name, but he's the one that started to open and make it an open series, because when you win, and I followed him because his theory on it, he'd start tight on the first series of downs, and the second series of downs he'd tell his lineman, take one step out. And he said, now next time you go out, take another step out. And the reason being, if the defensive person is going to move you, if he's going to move with you, I'm going to have what he call it a streamlined train going through, because now if he comes in, now you're going to block down. If he goes out, you're going to block him out or double team him. So that's when the wing T came in, and the T came in with Oklahoma started it.
Wasn't there something at some point in time? I never played football, other than a little bit of playground stuff. Did the football itself, the design of the football, change?
Yeah, it came down. It's much smaller. The varsity, I forget what it is. My hands were so small when mm-hmm. I played it. The ball that we played with was but like a pumpkin. And it was at night. It was the ball was white. It wasn't.
Oh wow! Well, I never knew that. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it was because the lights weren't that good, so they played with a white football. You tell people that, but they think you're nuts.
So did you ever play in the field where the parents' cars would come and surround the field, turn on their headlights, so you could play a night game?
No, you never did that. I was at that when at Stroudsburg where we were going to a bowl game, mm-hmm. and we didn't have lights, but we were going to play at night. Yeah. And then at Stroudsburg, the town came up with cars.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of that. And it's fascinating to me.
Yeah, that was for one game.
Yeah. Now, when you graduated high school and you go into the Army and you're playing, you were in France then? Were you in France?
I was in France for 2 years. Yeah.
And what was that experience like for you?
It was a learning experience because I was a radio operator. Hmm. And they sent they. This is what I was. I don't know why. I went 12 weeks of learning how to be a radio operator.
Wow!
So then they said, "We're going to advance you, so we're going to send you someplace where you have to do it, take more stuff." I said, "Okay," and I didn't know where they were going to send me, but they happened to send me to Parris Island in South Carolina, which is a Marine.
Oh, my God.
And I hate to tell you what the Marines call the Army.
No, I can imagine.
But for 6 weeks, it was worse than hell, I'll be truthful mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. you. But then they told us that they needed radio operators for France, so they flew us over there. We landed in Germany, and then they took us to France. When I got to France, they put me into quartermasters.
Hmm.
I never saw a radio. The only time I saw a radio was maybe 1 week out of a year. So you don't know what you're going to do. Maybe it's changed right now, but
right.
Wow. But I had a lot of fun. There's a lot of things that I couldn't see that I should have. I wanted to go to Normandy, and I was not too far, maybe 12 hours away from there. I never got there.
Mm.
But that was one thing I wanted to see. But
sports was a major part of the Army, and the military service. The late Frank Stefanelli, I think he played football while he was in the Army. And did you ever have that chance to play baseball or basketball?
Yeah, I played football and baseball in the Army.
In the Army.
Yeah. But let me tell you exactly, though. I did not play... The football that I played and the baseball that I played wasn't like playing with Notre Dame mm-hmm. or anything like that. If you were players like that stayed in Germany,
mm-hmm.
I was a little above high school and like maybe a small high school, a small college. But if you're like a player that would go to Notre Dame or they never got out of Germany because we played them one game and we after that we just stayed in France. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think they were talking about Frank Steffo. I think he said one time he played some football in China.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
The thing of it is. I didn't want to get up in the morning with more, get all that. When you made a sport, you got a Class A pass, so you can go any place you want to go where you're every station. But
why were we all so lucky, and how did it happen that you woke up in Faulkner?
That's funny. I got a job. I had a job in Binghamton at I forget the high school, but. And I, all of a sudden, a week, about 3 weeks before school started, they called me and they told me that they hired someone else.
The week before you were supposed to start?
Yeah. And they said so, because there's no contract, they have to do anything, they can do anything with you. So I said, well, what? And they said, I don't know, but you're not going to coach here or play or teach. So I went down to Stroudsburg, and they said, yes, an opening just came in at Faulkner, New York. So I said, well, where's that? So I came up to Faulkner and took that job. over a two-year period, I found out that the coach from Faulkner took my job in Binghamton.
Oh, you didn't know that for 2 years?
No.
Oh, my gosh. It's a flip-flop.
Yeah.
So, not even a flip-flop. Yeah. Wow.
So that's why I about to like to come here. And but I was supposed to be coaching in Binghamton.
Who are some of the players that you coached? And you know, you can't name them all. You might, but some of the players that you coached in Faulkner that listeners might recognize. Some of the names of the past.
You mean right now?
While you were coaching in Faulkner, who were some of the players you had?
Oh, Craig Paterny, probably one of the better coaches. My first year, I could probably name the Vanstroms. The kids that we had there, a lot of talent. Billy Haskins was great kid. The Garvey brothers, they were great. Mm-hmm. Mastretta, there's so darn many ones. That Al Nalbone, I can't remember his name either. He's going to kill me because he's still down in North Carolina. It was one of the best running backs we've ever had, and some of the greatest kids I had weren't stars. They were just kids that gave you all that they had and provided us with what we needed to play and practice against. And it was they were just as important to us as the starters.
And Faulkner's been great. And one thing I didn't realize, some time ago, and just again the other day I drove by, I didn't know they had a racetrack in Faulkner. There's a park down there. Somebody says race on it. Is that a racetrack?
Yeah, it says something about Bill Race Field, I think.
Oh, I thought it was a racetrack or something.
No, I suppose you could race
that
around.
That ties to you somehow.
What was it?
That field down there.
That field? Oh, that was...
It's like talking to him about the stadium. You're what, huh? No.
Yeah, well, you have one. Yours is even bigger than mine.
All right, let's not compare sizes.
But that must have been... that would have had to be a thrill in your life.
If it was up to my mom and dad, it wouldn't.
No? Why is that?
Oh, no. My mother was more of a football person and baseball than my dad. Mm-hmm. And I made a mistake. They came up my first game, and I made a mistake on the football field. I threw the ball, and it was intercepted. But anyway, it was a bad move, and I squeezed out, beating Southwestern 7-6. So I come home, and I walk in, my chest is blowing up. And I looked at my dad, and I says, "How do you think, Dad?" And he was reading the paper, and he puts it down, and he goes, "Talk to your mother." And I went out, and she's playing solitaire, and I look at her, and she picks it up, and she looks at me, and she says, "You are the dumbest coach I've ever met in my life."
Oh,
she
my.
Said, "If you think you can leave here and come down to Scranton and play for coach like that," she says, "they'll hang you from every pole they can find you." She said, "Bill, you stink. You are terrible."
Are you standing there like with your jaw like?
No, I start crying. I went upstairs and I'm thinking, I beat Southwestern 7-6, and that's a big win for us.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, "God, my mom thinks I'm bad."
Oh.
But it opened my eyes a lot, though.
And that team there in the mid-70s, you went 28-0, 28 straight wins, I should say, at one point with that group. And then when did the – after that, was there the gradual decline where maybe some of those star athletes or the blessed athletes aren't there and you start coming back down to earth and you know what I mean?
Yeah, it happened, but, you know, most sports, your peaks and it drops off. You know, your program is going to be, I think, my own opinion, is what happens when you start to go down. What does your program do? Does the kids still come out? Do they do give you a good game, the best they can, but they just aren't talented enough? And I said, our program, as we went down, But I have to say the kids that we had just didn't have the ability and being a great team, like when Pat Hernini was there right. and all these guys. But they maintained our program,
mm-hmm.
and they stayed with us.
They didn't quit. They didn't get frustrated,
quit. No.
And that says a lot about coaching, mm-hmm. you know, as well. That, you know, to play for a guy who expects your all, who is a, you know, like you said in the jokingly, but, you know, probably wouldn't be, you know, allowed to coach nowadays. I mean, you're hard on kids like that.
I'll tell you one thing. Yeah. We were on a real downer, a real downer. I was beat. And Joe Sanfilippo was walking off the field. And he looked at me and he said, "What's the matter?" I said, "Why, these last couple of years?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "The last couple of years, you've been better than you were when you were up there." Mm-hmm. And that came from him.
Wow.
You know, so I always remembered that.
Sure.
I never played or coached in football, but I would think it would take a better team and a better coach to win a game 7-6 than it would be 38-0.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
So that 7-6 bowl game, that was something.
Yeah. Sometimes, as coaching, you get a little bit too snooty, and I went through that, and it was somebody from Faulkner, like Jimmy Gatto, was the guy that was in the stands from the day I coached till the day that he died.
Mm-hmm.
And he, believe it or not, he made me do things more than probably my coaching staff. Because we were doing playing one game, and we needed a first down, and I lined up, and all of a sudden in the stands I hear. He hollers, "Why don't you run the slant, Race?" And I said, "Wow, I never even thought of that." So I called him back, and we ran the slant, and we hit...
Peter.
Yeah, we hit Larry Brickley's son, Sean.
Oh, gosh.
And we hit it, and we beat Dunkirk that year.
Wow.
Then I said, I came up after he was walking on. He says, "Why don't you listen to me once in a while?" I said, "I just did, Jim."
You know, Coach, when you started football, forgive my ignorance on this, but was the wireless technology available there for high school level where you could be on the sideline and be able to talk to assistant coaches up in a press box and
Did
you?
But we didn't. Not the first couple of years. Yeah. Not when I came here in... it was 1962.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember having headsets on.
So how would you communicate with them? I mean, they were all on the sidelines.
We have to have wait till quarters or wait till half times and do everything.
Yeah.
But it was shortly after that we got the phones. Actually, the coach that I worked under my first year, he went in, he got all that stuff for me. So I think in the second year we got phones.
Mm-hmm. Is it true that along that line, that in pro football, the quarterback has earphones in his helmet and he can talk to the coaching staff?
No, we don't have that.
No, but do they do that in pro football?
Not pro football.
Yeah, they can hear them. They can't talk back.
Mm-hmm.
But no, the technology with coaching and plays and
we had so many things. Our theory Mo Barber was my coach, and we and I played together at Strasburg, and we said if anybody gets a head job, we'll take each other. So we brought him up with us, and we started the kids out that we want to give them the best play that we can give them.
Mm-hmm.
So how are we going to do that? So Mo said to me, we're going to put some kind of a check thing that we can change the play without the kid being a lot of things in their head.
Mm-hmm.
So when we ran a series that if we call a play one way and they adjusted to that, we'd call a play, but we wouldn't change where we're going. We're just going to change the direction we want to go.
Gotcha.
So if we were going to go right, we call the same play, but go move it to the left. We didn't start playing a new play or anything. It was just a matter of going, move it over to the other side.
Coach, another path that you've walked, I was telling some people around a table here just the other day about the fact that Andrew had called me and you were willing to come on the times of your life and spend some time with us. And I said, Coach Race. And he says, Coach Race, Coach Race. He's the guy that always says hi to me when I go into Sports Hall of Fame.
Hmm.
You spent a lot of time there, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it down there. It gives me time. It gives me things and to talk to people again. And I'm around what I love. I love sports. I love everybody involved in sports. And I think that if you love it, you'll love it. If you don't like it, you don't like it. You know. But for me, my life is sports. I mean, my family and everything. I felt that I was cheating them.
A lot of sacrifices had to be made.
Because of the amount of time that I put in, and fortunately, they stood behind me. So,
with the Hall of Fame in mind, hanging on the wall, there's a lot of information. And did you ever coach against him, Shane Conlon?
I certainly did.
Mm.
Did you know then that he was on the track? He finally got down?
Shane was a back that was tough. He was a tough kid. So we always play it that no matter where he is, I want two people tackle him. I don't care where anybody else goes. I want to know where he's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to tell you this, because when he got drafted, you know, and I was out in a little place I've been visiting. And he came in, and I looked at him, and I said, you just got drafted? I said, you'll never make it. I said, you'll never make it, because look at your legs. Your legs are like toothpicks. You can't play pro football. He said, okay. So any time after that, when he saw me, he said, somebody told me I couldn't make it.
That's funny.
But no, I always felt he was a tough, but he was a kid that was – on top of everything, he wasn't cocky or anything. You know, he had the enough ability that he was also being looked at as a catcher for baseball.
He was a good catcher, baseball.
He was a great catcher.
Very good catcher.
You know, so I always respected that, and I always the biggest thing that could have happened to him was playing for Penn State, what was the coaches at Penn State that got in trouble?
Paterno.
When he said, they asked him one time, who was the best quarterback you've ever coached? And he said, Shane Conlon.
Mm.
That shocked the heck out of me.
Yeah.
But that tells you how he played at that level.
And to stay humble
doing it.
Who were some of the other players that you coached on the other team, your visiting teams, or you were playing against, like Shane Conlon, in your circle? Do you have a couple other names that you could share with the audience?
There was a lot, but I played against Bobby Barlett from Dunkirk. Bobby played with he played with Pitt.
Hmm.
Chuck Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the better quarterbacks I've seen, and he played defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Filippo believed that I'm not going to pay, just because you're a quarterback, you're going to put you someplace and hide you. You're tough enough to play. There was so many of them. Bill Berge,
yep.
You know, the guy from Randolph. There's so many in this area. For a small area, you look how many they put in pro football.
Why is that? We always joke, you know, it's something in the water down there in Chautauqua County because
with that in mind, when you coached, did the junior high school and the little communities and minor league football we used to have in town with the kids played in the midget football. Was that a help to the coaching and the process of those
what
ball
was that
players? The local leagues, like the midget football program and all of those programs. Was that a help to the final results at the high school level?
Faulkner was blessed with the programs. He had the Contis. They had the guys that worked with the even with holding the The Conti family in Faulkner, but they ran a fantastic. When I just walked in, and I was blessed.
Mm-hmm.
I asked them if they would not do a lot of things like we did, but just basic things. And Frank Conti said, we'll certainly. So I didn't tell them you have to run this, or you want to run that, or this, that. And they said, I just told them to, you know, can you just want you teach the basics that we live by at the Varsity?
Sure.
He said, Bill, he says, you tell me what you want. And he said, we'll do it. And for as long as I can remember, when I got a kid come from their program, I didn't have to spend a heck of a lot of time.
The fundamentals were there.
Because our feeding program with Faulkner was one of the best, I would say, in the state.
So, Coach, we're talking about football now, and it's hard because there's been hundreds and there's been thousands of outstanding athletes that have played in our high school program, like you said, the footprint in our county and around. But one name that every time I pick up a paper lately is Butera.
Butera,
what kind of a football player is he going to be? Or is he?
When I saw him play two games, that was enough of me. That's when I went back on the phone and I called Denny Dowd at Strasburg, and I told him, "Man, you got a gem in the war here." But they had his name, but they said that he was probably going to go to UB. Now I didn't know if he did, but they figured that's who was going to get
him. I don't believe he's
him.
Committed.
But they had well, there's some way now that they have that you can get on. They can go online and get any game they want in any place.
Oh yeah, they have, it's like Live Barn.
Yeah, so all they have to do is then they buy into that.
Yep.
So they have him.
Think about that. You used to have kids knowing that scouts were at a game, and they'd have to overcome those butterflies. And now, every single game they play, they have no idea who's watching
them. They don't. Because all you have to do is buy in, and you don't have to go and watch them. You'll get it to you, and it's. I went down to North Carolina, and we watched a football team down there called HUGH,
mm-hmm.
and they were the number one in the state. And we have good football too, but when you have 105 kids come out in high school,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just looking at them and coming out, and I'm thinking, I said to my son, I said, how many kids do you have?
Yeah.
He said there's 7,000 kids in the high school.
Wow.
When you have that, you can come out with the program. But if you play football in that school, you're basically going to play football only.
Bill Reese, did you ever have an opportunity, or were you ever asked to go somewhere else?
Yeah. Actually, he was a good friend of mine, was the guy at Warren.
Down in Warren?
No, Shea. Toby Shea.
Toby Shea.
Yeah. And when he retired, he called me on the phone and asked me if I'd go down and interview for Warren. And I went down, and we were ready to go. I appreciate the interview and everything. I said, but I have great kids coming back. And I said, I don't think that I want to change. So I stayed here. I had the job offer in Binghamton after we ran to 28th Street. We went to a conference down there, and it's North School down in good school, good mm-hmm. football. And the guy that was the AD down there asked me if I would continue. He put a piece of paper in front of me, and he said, it's yours. You can pro now. I will give you 5 years, and the day will buy for pros.
Yeah.
But I would have went down there years before, but the biggest one was when I got out of college. Jack Gregory got the job Rhode Island.
Oh.
And he called me up, me and Mo, the guy I was with, and he wanted me as a defensive backfield coach. And he said, you have to give me an answer. That was on a Wednesday. He says, you have to call me back Saturday.
Hmm.
Well, we just bought a house, and we're doing everything else, and we took our kids, and I said to him, I don't know, Coach. I said, it's going to be hard. He said, I'll give you one more week. But after that, I wish maybe I would have.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I'm not sad because I didn't, because right. I enjoyed everything right where I'm at, you know, and I don't have to go any place to make me happier. Is mm-hmm. to be right where we are and where my kids are. The school they had, the education they got, the opportunities they got.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't ask for better.
Well, Coach, you walked through a lot of doors we've been talking about. And when I arrived here today in the parking lot, well, there you were in the parking lot. You opened the door for me. You knew what door to open. As soon as you walked in that front door, you knew where to go left. You knew where every room was. How did you know everything about this radio station up here?
Here?
Yes.
I'll tell you exactly what happened.
Yep.
I don't know what Mike Taylor.
Yep.
Remember Mike Taylor?
Yep.
Okay, he was. I don't know how we met. We met them down in, I'll tell you where I met him. The place.
The pub.
Remember the place?
Oh, the place.
Oh,
yes.
The place.
Yeah. And we're sitting there one time, and that's when I retired.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, do you want to, you're going to die when you hear this. you want to broadcast? And I mm-hmm. said, I don't know. And then there was three of us that were going to get up for the job. And I said, I don't know. And so he went back, and then Faulkner said, called me back and said, Bill doesn't think he's ready to, Bill Davenport doesn't think you're ready to take it. He said, would you come back and it'll start a $7,000.
Mm-hmm.
I told Mike, and my first 3 years here, I got $7,000 a year.
No. Wow. That's
I got three for football, three for basketball,
mm-hmm.
and one for baseball.
Wow.
Yeah.
About what years was that?
65, 66.
96, 96,
yep,
97.
Yeah.
And how long did that go on?
I didn't retire until 2 years ago.
Yeah, but just before the pandemic, right?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I
so
knew I had
two,
to go.
You two used to meet in the hallway once in a while.
Oh, cool.
You
Coach?
Oh, yeah.
Coach Race would be up here every week. They would come up here and they'd... He'd you know, do it with Mike Taylor, then with Bill Wozniak and Matt Krieg, and now Tom Ames, and
yeah.
I mean, he would broadcast with the crew, and they would, you know, we had the matching shirts, and mm-hmm. they'd meet up here and take the van, and we'd go to Buffalo
oh, yeah.
or wherever, and
yeah.
it was a big production
it
with
was.
The WJTN
it really
Sports,
was.
And you know, almost like, you know, recently. I think it's timely to say this, John Madden dying, you know, in the NFL, and how here's a guy who was a coach, very smart man, you know, he only coached for what, 10 years, something like that?
What is the big thing with the football at the end of the year? The
Super Bowl?
Super Bowl.
Oh.
Didn't he? Yeah. He coached the Raiders, wasn't
it? Yep. And then, you know, here's a guy who has all this knowledge in his brain and was able to take it to the TV and put it on the telestrator there and draw up the plays. And he was able to take the audience into, you know, the game like nobody else. And we were very lucky here to be able to do the same thing with Bill Race, you know, to be able to come here and actually introduce to the average Joe listener, you know, get him into the mindset of what the coaches were thinking. And we were very blessed here at WJTN to have Coach do it for...
Yeah,
for...
yeah I had a lot to learn. But when the boy, it's, you just don't come in and he could start working with a mic. I mean,
a lot
my
of
God.
Prep. Yeah.
I mean, when I first got in, I think I was talking, I talked for about 3 minutes, and Mike looked at me and said, it's not on.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
When you were a small kid, Coach, what did you want to do when you grew up? I mean, before I can't imagine when you were 10 years old, you thought you were going to be a physical education teacher and football coach.
I never did.
What did you have any idea? I mean,
nope.
The family already said you're not going to be in a coal mine.
The first time I wanted to do something was when I got out of the service. And then when I got out of the service, my dad said to me that there's an opening for a tool and die maker
mm-hmm.
in this Davesham instrument division. He said it's like an internship and they'll pay for everything. He said, do you want to do it? I said, sure. So I worked there for 2 years, and then A friend of mine told me, get out of there. And he said, can you go to school? I said, yeah. And I said, well, I was in the service. He said, well, why don't you go and start using where they give you a check from the service. I forget.
The recruitment?
No.
There was a chance to go to school.
Yeah, they'll pay for it.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
He said because in two years they're going to drop it. The service is going to drop it. So he said, if you want to go, you better jump now.
That was a good program.
So I signed up and everything, and the tuition was $1,600. They gave me $800 a month, the service did, to go to school. Mm-hmm. So I paid $1,600, $3,200, but I got $800 a month from them to go to school. So the rest I was putting aside.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only time. And then I decided I'm going to go to the service because my mom and dad couldn't put me through.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting tired of working 7 days a week and with the program I was in. So I decided to go to East Stroudsburg. But, and another little story. I tried five schools, and I couldn't pass their entrance.
Oh, jeez.
My dad looked at me and he said, how did you get out of high school? I said, I don't know. I have no idea. He said, you can't go to college. He says, you might just as well stay where you are.
Right.
And then a friend of mine said that he knew where East Stroudsburg was. He says, well, you can send him down there. And my dad said, why? It's a waste of time. He said, one of the junior colleges was a good friend of my family's. He was the president.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, Bill, why don't you come out at my school, my junior high or junior college, start there, and then you can go to a four. He said, you can pass the entrance exam. So I took the test, and I was home one night, and he called me, and he said to my father, he said, tell Bill I want to see him. So I said, okay, and I figured I got in. So I went out there and was in Clark Summit. And he said, come on in the office. And he looked at me. He says, you know something, Bill? He said, this is the lowest entrance test I've ever seen in my life. He said, we can't take you in here if you paid me. He said, so I went back and told my dad. And he said, well, you can always come back in mines.
Oh, my gosh.
But I don't even know how I passed the test at Stroudsburg. Somebody must have loved me. But I passed. I failed five.
One thing I haven't heard today, and I thought for sure would have happened, that you must have had ice skates on, and you must have tried to throw the puck beyond this guy on the ice rink. Did that ever happen?
No. Mm-mm. Coach, did you even know to skate?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
No?
Did you ever play hockey?
We used to play hockey in the arena up here, the ice arena up here.
Did you play hockey?
No, we used to go up the school, Southwestern. Yeah. Faulkner would come,
that's right,
a bunch of guys.
That's right.
And we used to play at night.
That's right.
You know, guess who was the worst skater in the world?
Who?
Kurt Fischer.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny.
It looks like he's
oh,
on
my gosh.
You know how your skates turn in?
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Oh, that's funny. Oh, yeah. Boy. Now, as we start to wrap up some time here with Coach Bill Race here in the Times of Your Life, I have to ask you, I mean, obviously, you know, there's the football part, there's the coaching, there's the playing, but then, you know, being the gym teacher at Falconer for so many years, you got to, interact with kids that had no sports ability whatsoever. So that must have been kind of fun and interesting, too, to encourage them for physical fitness and such. What was your favorite unit to teach in gym? Favorite unit to play. Dodgeball's not...
I'll tell you what. The kids hate it. In fact, I'm going to tell you that when we were at Stroudsburg, they say dancing is... for athletes
line
and everything
dancing?
Else, and they said if you can do it and you get it in a program, and Dr. Sill told me, he said, if you ever get it, make sure you have some type of dancing in your program. He said, especially for your athletes. Okay, so I picked square dance.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, I remember we did that in Maple Grove, yeah.
Maybe I'm going to get we have a lawsuit against me now, but a lot of the boys did not want to hold hands with the girls. And I said to them, you're going to hold hands with the girls. And then they said, no, we're not. I said, okay. I said, the next time we have this, I said, I'm assuring you right now that you're going to do square dancing. So we started, and they said no, and I wouldn't give them a chance to pick the girls. They give them the straight lines, and when you met your partner, that's who you would dance with that week, you know? So they didn't do it, so I took my back pocket, and I took out tape, and I taped the boy's hand to the girl's hand.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that boy's hand to a boy's hand back
no,
then.
No, boy's hand to a girl's hand.
Oh, my gosh.
And I taped it.
I'll tell you what, though. Some of my best memories was learning how to square dance from Wally Carlson at Maple Grove. that's just one thing you didn't think you'd ever see was Wally Carlson and Marla O square dancing.
Hitchhiking a little bit on what you're talking about. Is it true, I've read and heard, that in the game of hockey, that some of the training and development of a hockey player is with the figure skaters?
Oh, sure.
Female figure skaters?
Oh, you want to learn how to ice skate, learn from a figure skater.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, and if you look at, you know, with recruiting players and people with skills, you know, like look at Coach. He's looking at track and field.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have somebody who has no interest in playing football, but they are a great cross-country runner.
Yeah.
Soccer players, their footwork. I mean, so you develop those. You have those raw skills. Mm-hmm. And if you put them in the right spot, you know, you can blossom, you know, into some of those great athletes.
I hope the kids, I didn't want them to go just play one sport. I like wrestlers, you know, they have their strong points. Wrestling is a good thing.
Sure.
My wide receivers and stuff, and they didn't like wrestling. I begged them to go into track for cross country and track, anything to do to keep them busy.
Sure.
And it's true in the sports program, when you start when you're just a youngster, like the path both of you will walk down, a lot of that becomes very valuable to you when your hair turns gray and all of those things later in life too, doesn't it? It's a real development skill, people skills and everything else. It plays a major role, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
But you know, I was AD down there for 25 or 27 years, and I think Faulkner had the best coaches committed to the kid himself. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying whether he's good or bad. I mean, giving the kids the opportunity to do something that they're going to be successful at. And I learned that from guys like Danny Lounsbury. Beck was a wrestling coach and everything. Mm-hmm. And I watched him, how he would work on the different kids that wrestled. You know, there was Bob Lindholm, Danny Mazaris, the way he used with baseball. You know, and not telling, they didn't have actually the team that he won the States wasn't his best baseball team. It was an average team, but the kids loved them, and they went out of their mind to play for them. And I think the coaches that worked with me down there and Faulkner, I mean, I never had a problem with them, and they always put the kids first in their program.
Coach, it must be a thrill. It has been and will be, and it always is. When you're in a restaurant or you're in a gas station or walking down the street, somebody hollers, "Hi, Coach." That must be a real thrill for you.
Well, there was one time wasn't too good. I had this kid in fifth grade, and he was bad. And I had a lot of times where I have to grab him, but you can't do now. But years later, I was sitting at a bar down in the place, and I got a tap on the shoulder. And the kid looked at me and said, "Hi, Mr. Ace, remember me?" And I looked at him. I thought to myself, "Uh-oh." I said, "No, I don't." He was about 6'4", and he had built like this, and he had a short cutoff thing. And he says, "Well, I'm the guy that you used to grab by the shoulders and shake me when I was at Finner." And I was going to get something. Uh-huh. But he looked at me. He says, "I deserved it." And then But that made me feel good, you know. But at the same time, I was scared.
Well, I remember one of my fondest memories of being a child was the first time that my brother and I got to go to one of the Falconer football games with my dad, because dad was the school physician for Falconer. We had our little Jamestown Lakers corduroy jackets in, and I thought it was so cool because when you're a little kid, you're seeing all this high school football, you know, the lights and everything, and we got to stand on the sidelines. On the Falconer sidelines, and I was on Dad's left side, and Ricky, my brother, was on his right, and Dad was there in his suit and tie and had his medical bag, and I remember it was the coolest thing to be able to be on those sidelines. And these high school Golden Falcons looked like giants.
Oh, yeah.
Giants to us. And a kid had been hurt. I don't know if it was a Falconer student or a player from the other team. I remember my dad said, you guys got to wait here. And Dad, now you see trainers, they'll run out there. Dad would go ever so slow. He would take his time to get out there to center field, and he got out there and, you know, kneeled down next to the player and ends up coming back. And, you know, Dad, is he okay? Yeah, he's all right, but I got to check on him at halftime. So we got to go into the locker room halftime at Falconer. And I remember it was dark. Mm-hmm. It was loud because all the cleats were hitting. And then I hear this guy yelling. This guy's yelling. And I'm like, I'm scared to death. And it's Coach Race. At that point, I didn't know it was Coach Race, but he's, you know, he's not being, but he's, you know, trying to pump the guys up. And what are you doing? Blah, 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 blah. And I asked my dad, I go, who's that? He goes, well, that's the coach. That's Coach Race. Why is he yelling? He goes, well, he's trying to get the players to play harder. I go, oh, do you like him? He goes, yeah. He doesn't like me too much sometimes.
I did.
Because the joke was, Dad would be very conscious about, especially head collisions and concussions, the infancy of concussions. So we're talking the 90s, before all this came out. If a kid got his head rung, my dad was very much like, he can't play. You try telling Coach Race, Coach Race, one of your star players can't play because he got his head wrong. Oh, boy.
Well, I tell you, now just think of it. This is what your dad was doing. You know, we were given a capsule, and if a kid got a headbang, you'd say, oh, you just got a little bubble, and you break this capsule in front of ammonia.
Right.
And the kid, first thing you do, the head would come up, and he made us. He said, no more.
Yeah.
You don't do it. And I said, why not? I said, the kid, look at me. The kid's up, and he's okay. He said, how do you know he's okay? You're not a doctor. That's the exact words.
Well, think about it. You're jerking up neck injuries, and, I mean, the infancy.
Neck injuries?
Oh, my God.
Did you ever have to go to a football player like the late Coach Hardenberg? Was at Lincoln Junior School when I was in seventh grade, and I went out for football, and we were at a practice there, and the things you were doing, and he come up to me and he says, "Russ," he says, "you're baseball. You like baseball, don't you?" And I was in football. I said, "Yeah." I said, "I like baseball. I enjoy baseball." He says, "Well," he says, "that uniform and those shoulder pads and helmet, I really need them." I said, I need that equipment. He said, so why don't you turn that equipment in and try baseball. Just stick to baseball.
Yeah.
But did you ever have to do that?
Yeah. I swore I would with the helmets they had. And then it came, you had the option when it first came in, if you wanted to come in with the football equipment. I said, no way. All my helmets go. I don't care anything. And I told Denny, your helmets go too. And he said, well, why? I said, because they're protecting him. Again, we got ours every year. It was a big expense, but our helmets were checked every year, and so was the baseball. Mm. And anything with the helmet, I mean, I didn't want any part to put on a kid's head if it wasn't passed by the... Mm-hmm. And then you have to sign, like when it comes back from the... when you get everything checked, you have to sign a paper. Mm. And you have to keep it. And there was one time the State Department came down, but we didn't know they were coming. And they walked in my office and they says, are your equipment back? And I says, yes. And they said, we want to check it. Then I had they checked it, went down, took about 15 uniforms of helmets, pads, all that stuff. And they said, where's your certification from your reconditioner? And I had all my there, and they said, it's a good thing to have. Some of you guys aren't doing it.
Mm.
But thank God we kept it. But,
yeah.
Thank God Hardenberg took my football uniform away from me and handed me a baseball bat.
Well, I tell you, I wouldn't want any my helmet put on my kid if it wasn't passed by the reconditioner.
I wanted to bring up, because, you know, again, we have so many things to talk about. We are going over time, but it's because I have a serious question for you, Coach. You have a little grandchild that you were up here a couple weeks ago boasting about to me about the physical abilities of this kid on the football field.
He is very, very fast. Very fast. He can pick him up and lay him down. But what I didn't like is he ran a 5.8 on 40. You know, he's only 11 years old.
Wow. Isn't that crazy? Did you hear that, Russ?
Yeah. Awesome. And he can fly. Awesome. I got it to the surprise of my life when some of these schools in North Carolina are trying to get him to go to school there, and he's only 11 years old.
An 11-year-old, Russ.
Wow.
Schools are recruiting to come to their school.
That is awesome.
Well, it's awesome, but in the same way.
Yeah, but I told Billy, I said, you're going to have to drive. And they would go one way. They would either take him home or they'll pick him up, but only one way. Mm-hmm. I said, you're going to have to be driving there. I said, it's about 20 miles away. I said, he's not going to know any kids.
Mm-hmm.
I said, keep him where he is. And Billy said, no, I'm definitely not looking at that. But I was surprised to even see that.
Mm-hmm.
But they had two of the guys, and it's unreal. I kind of got upset with that with them. But the kid can fly. He's got good speed.
Yeah.
Anybody, when I talk to him, sometimes I he walks up to me, and he'll be talking to me. And he looked at me, and he'll say, "You didn't hear me, did you? You didn't hear a word. You're deaf. When are you going to get a hearing?"
And that's when you say, well, coaches are very good at reading lips.
Yeah.
So we can read the coach on the opposite side, say certain something sometimes without ever actually hearing the words.
We did a lot of that when we were trying to do Maple Grove. What was the coach at Maple Grove?
Kurt Fisher.
No, before that. Oh, way back.
It wasn't Wally.
Wally
Carlson?
Well, we knew we were going to have to play him. And we knew they had what we thought was a checkoff.
Mm-hmm.
So we would always go to the side. When they were close, we could read the quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at it. We're taking them back, and we're looking at pictures that we took on them. We're trying to coordinate what the number meant to compared to what the play was being played.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't come up with anything. Finally, after I retired, Wally was over. We're talking up the Vikings, and he said, "I drove you crazy with our numbers, didn't I?" I says, "Yeah, we did." I said, "We spent hours on that," and he said, "Why?" I said, "Because we're trying to figure out what play you were coming with." He said, "It wasn't a play." Hmm. I said, "What do you mean it wasn't a play?" He said, "All it was, what count are we going to go on? 3, 2,
Oh, my gosh.
But the amount of time that, I mean, all our coaches were trying to figure it, and they couldn't, and all it was the starting count.
Sure.
You talk about a Wally Carlson. There's the late Wally Carlson from Southwestern, a great athlete, and he was great in working with us in the community, in the skating program. I understand and remember that there were 17 schools looking at him as he graduated from Southwestern High School as that football player.
Wow.
That is awesome.
It's a good school.
So what is it? We were joking earlier, Coach, about is there something in the water in Chautauqua County? Because we have all these athletes. You look at the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame, and it's you know, as we more inductees come out, and you two included, it's not just filling a Hall of Fame with sports people. I mean, you read the stories.
Oh, yeah. They all have a good story.
They all have a story. So what is it?
Well, look at the Sirianis. If you look at that, they're going to put five people, because Jay's wife, His wife was Kay Beaver from Randolph.
Yep.
She's one of the best athletes ever to come out of here and voted JCC's one of the best athletes they've ever had. Now she's going to get it. Mike's going to get it. Jay will certainly get it.
So do you think it's the fact that there is so much sports history here that people are elevated or feel not pressured, but they know that there is a goal to if they're not going to be in the major league, that's fine, but they know that they might be able to get into a Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame someday?
I'll tell you, since Randy and this guy, and when they established the Hall of Fame, they established something that they wanted to last for years and years and years. And why? Because there are people in this county that that just come in but become citizens of the county, that they've done a justice. And I mean, if it wasn't for them, a lot of these people wouldn't be recognized.
Right.
And we have a man right now that picking up where they left off, and we're getting to be known. Right now, I think we are known. We have people from Saratoga Springs who they were working on a jockey, and they didn't have enough information. We already had put them in our Hall of Fame. They came down here and got our information and brought it to Saratoga Springs, and he got in right real quick. But we have a lot of things that people that, you know, and we had a woman the other day come in, and she said, I just want to look around here. Well, the first thing she said to me, she said, how long are you open? I said, just for another hour. She said, I have to get my daughters and wife, her husband and her kids to come over and look at it. Now, she was from Minnesota, and she said she's never seen anything like this. And she said how nice it is that you can do this and bring realize what the county has.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, you have a lot of pride and a lot of people here that you're proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt real good about that. You know, I think we, it's not done without a lot of work.
Right.
And Randy and these guys that established it, you know, the people of the county have to realize they wouldn't have it if it wasn't for...
Well, we had a dream and you guys made it come true.
No, well, we couldn't have it. Mm-hmm. The opportunity had you guys didn't get the... The ability and the time to put into it.
Everything that survives has to have a foundation.
And by the way, the guy I'm talking about is Russ Dietrich. You kind of know him. Yeah,
you keep pointing on the radio.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Well, it all starts with a good coach and a good educator and a good upbringing, good parents. I mean, that's the world that we hope, you know, that's one great thing about sports in today's world, especially when there's so many... distractions in life.
Yeah, well, one that I, you know, looking at what happened today, the other night with AB, I thought, kids see that, not a good, not good for sports,
no.
You know.
And, we're referring to Antonio Brown.
Sometimes I think professional people, I love them dearly. They have a tough life and everything else, but sometimes I think they forget that kids are looking at them, and they think they're great, and they have that in their mind. So they can affect some kids by doing something. I think most of pro football players and basketball players and everything really care about the kids that watch them play, and I think that's what they should be looking at.
I think one of our lucky things, and one of our things we can be grateful for, at least I feel, is the education program that we live in this area. So many places, they've cut the athletic programs right down to nothing. They've cut the music programs almost down to nothing, and the other on stage programs down to nothing. But our school systems have do everything they possibly can to continue the athletic program, the music programs, the stage programs, and everything. And that's an important part of the education.
That's a big part.
A major part. You know, I've often talked, and I've even talked to Angela and his wife, a school teacher can put on the school board the first day, 2 + 2 = 4, 2 + 2 mm-hmm. is four. And if you look at that every day, pretty soon, 2 + 2 = 4. But in an athletic program or a music program and a band program, there's so many things that, boy, you play 1,000 football or baseball games and no two are the same.
You can march
down the street in a parade or put a concert on and no two concerts are the same. And so much of that comes through those programs. And thank God for the coaching staffs and the directors of the music programs and those other programs in our school mm-hmm. system. And thank God that the leadership has continued to try everything they possibly can to keep them as an offer to the student.
Well, you know, I think the people, the strong people in this town, I wouldn't want to live anyplace else.
Mm.
There's so many things going on in the world today that, you know, you don't feel safe, or you don't feel the people are behind. I think Jamestown is a small town with big things.
Mm.
You know, they established big things. They, like the baseball team, when they lost them, you guys went and got baseball so it can be back here. I think everybody works together. Mm-hmm. Everybody's not going to work all the time.
Right.
You're going to have your problems. But usually, I wouldn't want to be anyplace else.
That's not true. Jamestown is part of a team. And part of that team is Faulkner, Lakewood, Warren,
all those
Maple Grove. All the whole area is part of that team. And
when you have the right teammates, championships can be won.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep, when I come up like with Breck and Cayenne, and my and I have three great grandkids now coming up, and they're going to be the Billy's. One is Rick, and one is Hutchley, and then the smallest one is Shay, and she's a girl. And I said to Carl the other night, I said, she's going to kick the heck out of the rest of them. But the families have come back.
Sure.
And like I said before, if I were to want to go any place else, no, I wouldn't.
Well, for what it's worth, Coach, we are glad that you elected to stay in Faulkner, because you've made each of our lives, and I know many of the sports lives, and definitely Faulkner, if not the greater Jamestown area, and young coaches as well, you know, that are now coaching because they're inspired by people like you. And, you know, as you were saying, you know, not everybody can pass their entrance exam sometimes, and thank God for
five times.
Coach, we appreciate you being here on the Times of Your Life.
Hey,
thank you so much.
My pleasure, believe me. Great.
Russ, what a great way to start the year.
Oh, fantastic.
I mean, wow.
Thank you for pulling all of the loose ends together.
Yeah, we got to do what we got to do to share some great stories, and we will continue to do that every Saturday here on WJTN as long as they allow us to. So I want to thank our sponsors, Lena's Pizza and Rainer's Liquor Store. I'm Andrew Hill.
I'm Russ Teacher.
And this has been the Times of Your Life on WJTN Jamestown.